Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
The future, that's where our minds are at Western Illinois University Quad Cities. We are innovators, searching for something new outside of the textbooks. Dog-loving, leadership-driven, world-changing. Whether you choose to study on campus or online, your future is designed on your terms. Start your future at wiu.edu/QC.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.
Giving homeless and at-risk youth a place to rest, and giving all kids a chance to explore in the cities. WQPT's most popular event, Imagination Station, is right around the corner. Why you'll need to act quickly just to get in the doors, that's just ahead. But first, giving kids a place to stay when they have no other place to go. The cities hasn't had a homeless youth shelter for more than 15 years. That's about to change. Now that the YWCA of the Quad Cities has moved into its new Rock Island facility, it's turning its old building in the heart of the city into a place for kids to rely on as an alternative to living on the streets. It'll be called Allen's House, after longtime director of the Doris and Victor Day Foundation, Alan Egley. Nicole Soderwasser, the head of youth outreach for the YWCA, tells us more. So the YWCA has found that there is a sustainable need for a homeless shelter for youth. That's a sad statistic to say.
It is a very sad statistic. And I mean, there are a lot of reasons for it. There's a lot of things you can point at and say, ooh, this is what caused, or this is what's elevated that statistic.
Yeah.
Lots of times, you know, it's youth that have been locked out of their home. They run away. A lot of youth don't fall under that idea of the traditionally homeless.
That's what I was going to try to get at, because I mean, when you think of the traditionally homeless, it might be mental health issues. It might be drug addiction issues. Mm-hmm. It might also be getting away from an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. Some of that, I'm sure, is with youth homelessness, sure. But that's not necessarily the root cause all the time.
No, it's not. And a lot of the kids, you know, when we talk about statistics and we talk about there's approximately 2,000 youth that are homeless, you know, without a fixed, stable nighttime residence in the Quad Cities per night, it blows your mind to think, well, where are these kids? I don't see them. You know, I don't see them because they're.
And I have to admit, I saw that statistic and I was going to bring that up and I thought that number can't be right.
It probably isn't right. It's probably actually low. Because those numbers are only captured when kids are really admitting that they don't have a fixed, stable nighttime residence. And that's, you know, that's the federal definition of homeless. And, you know, when we look at youth that are unhoused in a traditional sense, that's where they fall. They're the kids that are couch surfing. The parents or family can't support that youth's needs, whether it's, you know, financial support, emotional support, or housing support. Sometimes a whole family unit will be split up into three or four different places, which makes the youth by federal definition homeless.
So explain to me why the YWCA decided this is the time, this is the need, and we've got the place.
It helped that they were able to fundraise and, you know, do all kinds of capital campaigns to open that new building. It's just absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. For the Early Learning Academy, and you know, to have things that the public can do and support that venture, left the other building empty. It has already been licensed by DCFS as a daycare for multiple years, so we had a pretty good idea that we could get it licensed again as an overnight youth shelter. So you know, it fits with the WISE mission to, you know, enhance the lives of women and children and people in the Quad City area. So it was a great fit. And the director, the executive director, Julie Larson, and I have known each other for several years. We worked together in the original group that wanted to have a homeless shelter on the Illinois side for youth. And so we had a discussion about, hey, what are you going to do with that building? I got a great idea.
Well, let's go back in history a bit, because this building to be called Allen's House. And there's a particular reason why you have picked that name. But also, Allen was kind of the spearhead for when the last youth homeless shelter went away. So get me from that point to here.
Sure. Allen Egli was, I mean, he was quite the force to be reckoned with and had a huge passion for populations that he felt were unseen and underserved.
And he had some of the power there because he's with the Doris and Victor Day Foundation, which has done amazing work throughout the community for years.
Yes. And he had the foundation backing, and he had a lot of Quad City area backing. A lot of other, you know, foundations would look to him for guidance and the kinds of things that Doris and Victor Day would support as like a meter, you know. Unfortunately, with the closing of the John Lewis Youth Shelter in about 2008, what we saw was that there wasn't community supports that would sustain a youth shelter, that it needed to be a larger federal grant or larger state grant that would sustain this operation.
Doesn't mean the need wasn't there.
Correct.
It just wasn't sustainable as an operation.
Yes. And I don't think the need's ever gone away. I don't think it's ever gotten lower. I think it's gotten more so. I think, and I know it's cliche to say this now, but especially since COVID, the folks that were willing to take teenagers as foster parents or even just be foster parents in general have really dropped off for different reasons, but COVID was a huge thing. And we just don't have the DCFS on the Illinois side. We don't have the DCFS licensed homes that will take these youth the way that they used to. Are they out there? Yes. Are there service providers contracted to provide those homes? Yes, but it is very difficult.
So how do you see Allen's House being different than perhaps what is offered right now?
A lot of things that will be different will be that, you know, we can't decline, you know, except for in a very rare circumstance. We have enough bed space that, you know, hopefully we're not full.
Understandably.
Hopefully we're not full. It's a good problem to have, right? Hopefully we're not full every night. So community youth will be able to come into the shelter. They will be able to work with a caseworker, case manager to help them get on their feet, whether that is working with them to connect them to service providers in the area, working with them to try and work them back into a home situation with parent, guardian, or relative, or whether it's to get them on their feet in a transitional living type of a situation. So I think that will be, you know, different from what's available now, is that there will be 24/7 a place for a youth to show up wanting services.
Well, it's also part of the umbrella of the YWCA.
Absolutely.
Which has always been, as you said, it's the core mission is to grow stronger women, stronger families, and thereby stronger children.
Yes. Absolutely. It works very well with the YWCA's mission. Over the years, the YWCA has, you know, not only focused on, you know, the early learning, but also on expanding into youth at risk in our communities. They've obtained different grants, you know, the Reimagine Safety Grants. They've also obtained a Teen Reach Grant recently. We've got some Federal Basic Center grant and a street outreach grant, so we're able to actually sustain and provide the services that the youth need.
What are you going to do as far as, because you said you're not going to turn people away, but there's certain age groups or perhaps, and I hate to use the term troublemakers, but there are certain people that could arrive and cause trouble.
Absolutely. And we're aware. We have been working to make sure we have a good, and we do, but improving always our relationship with Rock Island Police Department, with county, because they're right there.
And I was going to say, that's going to be who comes right first. There. Absolutely.
Yep. And we want them to know what we're doing. We want them to know, you know, who we have in our shelter. Going to be some good communication that occurs there. as well as knowing our kids as they come in and having very strict policies and things that we're going to have to do to make sure that we are able to keep youth safe while they're in our space. We have, you know, we'll have obviously a dorm type setting. So it'll be a male room and a female room, but we're also going to do a few single bedrooms for youth that might be ill, or non-binary youth that really aren't comfortable in either space, or a youth, you know, maybe we have a 16-year-old that finds herself or himself homeless with a young child. We don't want it, we can't put them in with, you know, other teens that we don't know backgrounds on, right? So we're going to have separate spaces so we can do our best to maintain and contain any behavior problems or anything that might be an issue.
Explain to me the timeline that you're seeing right now.
Well, I really was hoping for July 1st.
Rearview mirror.
But yes, always. But, you know, any kind of construction projects, it's always, you know, it's my best guess. My best guess is by the end of the year. I really, after I lost July 1st, I wanted October 1st. And we're at the 6th of September now, so that's slipping away.
Yeah.
But I'm really hoping before the first of the year. I want to try to be ahead of the winter coldness and things for youth that just won't have anywhere to be safe during that time.
Tell me about the fundraising efforts as well, because that's going to be ongoing.
Yes, absolutely. While we have about a $430,000 price tag to get to be able to complete all of the construction. We've started, but to get it all completed, it's about 430 or so. We're between 80 and 100,000 short of that. We got a big grant from DCFS to help us out. We've got money from Doris and Victor Day, always a great supporter.
So tell me about how you're selling this as far as fundraising goes. I mean, you got to explain to people what the need is, but do you think it's a hard sell, so to speak?
It really depends, you know, on the person. I think it's hard for a lot of people, social workers and service providers, you know, alike, to accept that there are youth that have these needs.
Because we're trying to, like we said, we're trying to wrap our minds around that mm-hmm. 2,000 youth figure yeah. of being homelessness. But then when you say, as you said, couch surfing and, mm-hmm. and people are dispersed into other people's houses, you're staying at a friend's place, you're in the basement, you're whatever, right. the number starts to make more sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, how do you sell that to a potential donor?
Carefully.
Yeah.
You know, you have a conversation and kind of feel out where they are and what they understand about housing instability and how people become homeless. Because it is a hard number. Like you said, it's a hard number to wrap your head around. And it's even harder if you're someone who is pretty invested in Quad City Social Services and you know there are agencies that are paid to prevent this, right? And there are. And those are great agencies. And they do tremendously wonderful work with these kiddos. But we're talking about a population that's unseen, too. You know, the agencies that come across these youth are agencies that come across them because they have law enforcement involvement or they're struggling in school. But what about the kids that aren't going to school? What about the kids that just stay home, you know, or, you know, home isn't, but just stay unseen all day long.
Right.
You know, if they're not getting in trouble and they're not showing up in the places where they would normally be counted, how do we know that they're there? You know, and we don't. So it's our best guess. We know they are, but it's our, you know, capturing that number is impossible.
Well, and I think it's also important, and help me understand this, is that your role is not just a hotel. You're not housing
Correct.
Kids. What else are you hoping to provide, and how do you hope to provide it?
We are, you know, on the very basic end, you know, if you're familiar at all with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like the very first thing we want to supply is that shelter. We want that safe place to be. And then we want to go from there. So food, clothing, showers, meet those basic needs and then build on that. What does the youth need to return to a setting with a family member or a trusted adult with them? Can we provide that for them? Is it counseling services? Is it additional income to help pay for them to stay, you know, at a safe adult's house? What is it? What do we need to do? And we can build that around that youth and provide those services. We will have we'll have a computer lab on site, which will have credit recovery options for youth that have fallen behind in school or maybe not attended. We will have The Y Empowerment Center has purchased software from Google and has internship opportunities and employment coaching and training opportunities that the youth can use while they're in our care. Something that kind of helps head off some things and be able to just help them learn and help them, you know, perfect what they need to do to live on their own so that they can transition into an independent situation if they're ready.
And how do you reach the kids? Because I could see a child, a teenager saying, I'm perfectly comfortable on this couch. I don't need your help.
Correct. And I think there's a lot of them that will, you know, will definitely do that. We will be doing we already have a street outreach team, you know, that goes out. We go to places that youth hang out away from adults, you know, skate parks, mall, library. We make sure we're putting up flyers, dropping things. We leave, we call them survival kits with resource information as well as prepackaged, pre-cooked meal, water bottle, those kinds of things, and just information for kids. They can grab them, they can go through it. Hopefully, you know, that will also draw some youth in.
And sadly, as you said, you may just be scratching the surface.
And I believe we are. And I think we'll find that out once we get into, you know, further into this project. I think, you know, I'm really hoping for a quick start, you know, and I think it'll be a slow, you know, maybe a few kids in the beginning. And I think that will grow.
And we talked about, you know, making sure that the kids accept it. What are you going to do to make sure that the community supports it? Because getting the kids involved is one thing, getting the backing of the community is another.
And this has been my soapbox for a really long time. I have, you know, asked for these services for kids at the agency I was at previously, you know, where I am currently in the community, and I'm going to continue to do that. I will continue to talk with churches. I will continue to talk with businesses around our location. We're really tied into social services networks. And obviously we have our board members and such that are really good at getting us, you know, where we need to be to spread our message.
Our thanks to Nicole Sotowasser, the head of youth outreach for the YWCA. Jason Carl says much of his musical style is influenced by rock, folk, and blues musicians, as his original material is written and performed with honesty and passion, he says. And that's what brought Jason to the stage when he joined us at the Black Box Theater. Here's Jason Carl with Crazy Life.
Thinking you should and knowing you could, timed it just right and you're feeling pretty good, but you're wondering if it would be alright. With nothing to hide, it's easy to decide, just move on over and have a look inside, but you're wondering why your mind is so uptight. Spinning around in my chair, but I just can't get you over to my side. There ain't no rules in there, it's a box your brain is in, it's a picture painted in your mind. With nothing to lose but an old pair of shoes, you can run around world almost any way you choose, and as long as things improve, you're doing fine. Keep moving ahead, making some bread, saving up a little like your old man said, with a pillow underneath your head every night. And I'm spending, there ain't no rules in there, it's a box your brain is in, it's a picture that's painted in your mind. say what's going on today. The real world ain't real no more. It's standing in your way. I take experience over pain every time. You gotta take another look. It ain't written in a book. You can get anything you want. Just talk directly to the cook. And as long as all that took, sure flew by. Something wrong, and when you're living on the edge, it's a long, crazy life.
Jason Carl with Crazy Life. WQPT is all about the kids, whether it's the children's programming you see every day, the books and reading program and outreach to schools, teachers, and families we provide, or that big party we call Imagination Station that brings together great kids' events and popular PBS kids' characters. And it's coming up again next month. Tickets going on sale next week. And we talk with WQPT Educational Outreach Director Melissa Gravert. Imagination Station, once again, it's free for everyone, but you got to get, what do you, I want to say you got to get tickets,
registered. Registration link will be live on October 1st.
Yeah.
Attendees
first
will be
come, able, first serve.
Yes, definitely.
And people really do contact you right away, don't they?
They do. And you'll be able to choose as an attendee between a morning session, 9 to 11, or afternoon, noon to 2.
Yeah, same program, both. It's just to... make sure that you have enough, because the kids come. And if it was first come, or if it was the first ones that showed up, it would be all at one time.
Right, so to handle capacity, we have two sessions.
Imagination Station is such a fun time. I mean, what does WQPT try to get across to the families of the kids?
So it's a big celebration of PBS Kids, right? And a celebration of our community. And so attendees, students, kids, and their families will get to come and enjoy activities with... some of our favorite PBS Kids characters,
sure.
Right? Including costume characters for about 10 different PBS Kid characters.
This is Elmo, so I can have this. All right, thank you.
That's yours.
Love Elmo.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah, and then other activities, make and takes, we call them. So things that kids will be able to create during the event and take home and enjoy at home as well.
This has been going on for a number of years. I mean, Imagination Station's been, it's a tradition at WQPT.
Yeah. We're very proud of that.
It's really, it is fun to see the characters, but it's also so much a part of the outreach and the educational aspect of WQPT.
It is, yes. So another feature of the event is we are given books by United Way. So every kid that attends that wants a book will get a free book to take home. We also have some other special guests that celebrate music and art. We have Alina and Hamlet, Being Bilingual Rocks. We have the Quad City Botanical Center Plant Discovery Bus will join us. We have the therapy dogs from QC Can. Rock Island County's 4-H group will be joining us. And the QC Toddler Zone, so for the little kids, too, to have a place to explore. So, yeah, it's the PBS Kids characters and then even more educational and entertainment.
And it's held here at Western Illinois' Quad City campus. So, I mean, the parking's fine and the facility is just pretty well open.
Yes. So we'll be using the entire campus for the event that day. So we're very grateful for that. And yes, plenty of parking, plenty of space.
Why is it important for WQPT to make sure that something like an Imagination Station is available to, I was going to say kids, but actually families?
Right. So again, it is a free event and it is a celebration of what we do through WQPT and PBS Kids, but also a celebration of our community, just showing that we can have that educational aspect, but also be engaged and entertained.
Because right? It's more than just TV. I guess that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to get at, is that,
right,
and you're
right.
so active in the outreach. Mm-hmm. I mean, you reach how many students, how many schools, and it's a year round.
Yeah, so we of course do our summer of adventure tour, but then during the school year, we're in classrooms, giving away free books, doing family workshops, teaching ESL classes. So all of those people that we engage with during those events are invited to Imagination Station. So we see many of them there as well.
And we do see, you know, homeschooling. We mm-hmm. do know, you know, so I mean, it's been, WQPT has been a resource in so many different ways, not only in the classroom, but also in some of these private classrooms,
right?
And also for kids after they leave the classroom.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So we partner with all of those organizations, whether it be a homeschool group or others, and invite them as well.
Key yeah. is literacy too. Mm-hmm. I know the reading program is so critically important and so close to so many of our hearts at mm-hmm. WQPT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our first book donation program partners with local schools and teachers or families, and they can receive books to build their home libraries. So we do that through those outreach programs, and we love it. Yeah.
Tell me once again how quickly, I know I keep saying tickets now, mm-hmm. but how quickly the registrations do fill up. I mean, it really is important for families, if they want to be a part of Imagination Station, to find out about it as quickly as possible.
Right, so they can go to our website, wqpt.org/imagine or /imaginationstation, both of those work, to find more information. Also, our Facebook page has tons of information there, but it will lead them to that registration site, which again, is essentially active now, but will be accessible and ready to go October 1st.
So. And I've been a part of a couple of them, and what's mm-hmm. great is first off, it gets very loud.
Yes.
Because these kids
yes.
are having the time of their life. Right. It's also open to a number of different age groups.
It is, yeah. So it's primarily for, I'd say, preschool, early elementary. But we also try to include activities that upper elementary, even perhaps middle school students would enjoy. We have a lot of high school students that join us as volunteers.
Sure.
So that's another thing to mention. We still are looking for volunteers, wqpt.org/volunteer.
Nice.
But yes, it's really meant to be an event for the whole family.
WQPT Educational Outreach Director, Melissa Gravert. Once again, tickets go on sale October 1st and they go quick. Find out more at wqpt.org. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues and the cities.
At IHMVCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHMVCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
The future, that's where our minds are at Western Illinois University Quad Cities. We are innovators, searching for something new outside of the textbooks. Dog-loving, leadership-driven, world-changing. Whether you choose to study on campus or online, your future is designed on your terms. Start your future at wiu.edu/QC.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.